This is the MCrit Podcast, where we bring upstairs care downstairs. Hi, this is Scott Weingart, and this is another MCrit Podcast. Now, just before we start, I just want to tell you how the show works in terms of the difference between the audio and then the written show notes, because I've been getting some questions about this. Now, here's the deal. If you're subscribing through iTunes, you're going to get the actual audio delivered to you, or maybe you have another podcasting program, whatever. You're just getting the audio. And then there's the show notes, which are actually on the blog website. And that's where all the additional information, all the links, all the articles are. And you really want both. Now, depending on how tech savvy you are, there's a bunch of ways of handling this, but essentially you should subscribe to the audio through either iTunes or, if you're more tech savvy, through whatever program you use, and then you should figure out some way of getting the written stuff. Now, for the real tech savvy folks that are using blog programs, and you'll know what I'm talking about, you could just subscribe to the blog. Great. Most of my listeners, from what I've heard, not using blog programs, and that's great. What you should do then is just subscribe to the email notifications, because what that'll do is it'll tell you when a new show is available, but it'll also send you the show notes in your email. Alternatively, when you go to iTunes and you see there's new audio, you can just go to the website, blog.mcrit.org, and then you'll also see the show notes. But the podcast is definitely better with those show notes added in. All of this is explained on the subscription options link at the website. So if you go to blog.mcrit.org, blog.emcrit.org, and click on the right side of the screen on subscription options, you'll see all of this there laid out for you. All right, let's get started with the show. So today we're going to talk about the reversal of antiplatelet and anticoagulation drugs in the patients with head trauma. And this is a complicated issue. A lot of new things are coming out. How you're actually going to treat these patients is a moving target. Let's first talk about the Coumadinized patient. Probably one of the more common situations you get is a patient comes in. They might be drowsy. They might even be unconscious. You get their INR back, and it is 2.1, and you've taken them to the scanner. They have a subdural there. What do you do with these patients? Well, the first easy recommendation is they need vitamin K. And vitamin K is going to start the reversal of Coumadin, because Coumadin knocks out these vitamin K-dependent factors. Now, vitamin K should only be administered through two routes. It should either be administered orally in the non-emergent patient, or it should be administered by IV drip in the emergent patients, and there's no indication for subcutaneous or IM. The absorption is better orally than it is subcutaneously. Dosing is more consistent. So oral for the non-emergent and IV piggyback for the emergent. And yes, there is rare reports of anaphylaxis with the IV piggyback, but it's probably idiosyncratic, and their bleed that's pushing their brain is more important right now than that low risk. So if they have blood in their head, you give the IV dose. It's 10 milligrams. You give it over about 10 minutes, and you don't think about that. That just goes in. It's not going to start working for 6 to 12 hours. So that's not going to be the solution. That's just one thing you do to help later on. So what is the solution? Well, the old time method was to give FFP, and you'd have to give a bunch, and whatever you gave probably wasn't enough, and you'd recheck the INR and it still wasn't there. And the FFP reversal strategies, they don't really get the patient where you want, that INR of less than 1.6, 1.5 for 12 to 24 hours in some studies. And that's just way too long, because a lot of their bleeding is during those first 4 hours, and especially during that first hour. So you really need these guys reversed as quickly as possible. The other thing is that in patients without these drugs, the bleeding usually stops after those first couple hours. In these patients who are anticoagulated or have antiplatelet drug, that bleeding could continue for 24 to 48 hours. So even if they come and present later, you should still reverse them aggressively to get them reversed in the first hour. That's where their hematoma size goes from kind of small to great big hematoma. And that's what you don't want. So you want something quicker. And there is something quicker now that's fairly readily available, and that's prothrombin complex concentrate. And what this is in most cases purified factors that Coumadin hits. So predominantly we're talking 2, 7, 9, 10. I'm not going to bore you with the whole clotting cascade. Let's just leave it at the prothrombin complex concentrates. You'll hear them referred to as PCCs, contain the stuff that Coumadin knocks out. Now, in Europe, they have four-factor PCCs, all four of those factors we just mentioned. And actually, the seven, factor seven is actually activated. And that's in some ways good because the body doesn't need to do that activation. And I think in some ways bad because it probably leads to more thrombotic complications. In the United States, we only have three-factor PCCs. And that's pretty much 2, 9, and 10. And it's probably not as effective as the four factors, but it probably also has lower thrombotic complications because none of those factors are activated. So it's essentially like you're just giving these patients FFP. Now, the other cool thing about these products is, first, they're purified, so there's very little infectious complication, virtually nil, and there's no blood type needed. Any blood type goes just fine with any of these agents from the PCC category, so you don't need to wait for that type and screen to be done like you would with FFP. Now, universal donor FFP, which is AB FFP, is very, very tough to get. It's in scant supply. And unless you are the trauma center for the area, you're not going to have that ABFFP readily available. This goes in very quickly. It doesn't need to be thawed from the freezer. And you could put in the entire dose in a span of 20 minutes. FFP, each unit has to run in, has to be thawed. You need a whole ton of it so the patients get fluid overload. It's a big problem. Now, PCCs, they go in over 20 minutes, and 10 minutes after that, you could send a repeat PTINR, and they're done. That's it. So in a half hour, they're fully reversed. FFP takes forever to go in, forever to make up, and you check your INR after the dose you think they need, and it turns out they need more. So how do you give these PCCs? Well, they come as a dry powder. And they're usually in the refrigerator, but they don't even have to be. They could be at room temperature for 6 months. And you reconstitute them, you put them all together into an IV bag, and you drip them in over 20 minutes. Your hospitals, I'm sure, have this stuff sitting around because it's what they use for the hemophiliacs. So you just need to get access to them. And that involves sitting down with your neurosurgeons and your hematologists, and wow, what a mix that is, and actually talking about a protocol for the hospital for reversal of patients with intracranial bleeds on Coumadin. And you'll come up with a protocol, and you'll probably be given somewhere between 20 to 50 units per kilogram, like I said, over the span of about 20 minutes, and you could pick those numbers based on the available studies, and I'm going to give you a whole bunch of links in the show notes on these topics. And you'll come up with something. Now, one of my hospitals uses 20 units per kilogram. Another one of my hospitals uses 50. Can't really tell you. Sometimes the 20 is not enough. And if they have an INR of like 8, I'll even at that hospital, we use the lower dose, give a higher dose. But for the most part, we found that 20 units per kilogram is enough to reverse almost every patient down to a normal INR. So they're getting the vitamin K. They're getting the PCC, which I think is much better than FFP for these patients due to the rapidity of action. And they're reversed. Great. Now, what if you have a patient whose INR is 3.0, but they're not taking Coumadin, and it turns out they have liver failure? I would still use the vitamin K. I would still use the PCC in these patients, but they need FFP as well because they've knocked out a whole bunch of factors that aren't going to be included in the PCC. So give them the vitamin K, you give them your PCC, 20 to 50 units per kilogram, and as soon as the FFP is thawed, you give them 2 to 4 units of FFP on top of that. All right, so that's your Coumadinized patient. What about your patient taking the antiplatelet drugs like aspirin or the great evil drug in my mind, Plavix? And I just really don't like Plavix because of the patients I see coming into the ED on Plavix with bleeding complications. It's just horrible. Now, it might have fantastic efficacy for what it does. I haven't read that it does in the articles I've seen, but who am I to say? I'm not a cardiologist. I'm not a neurologist. Maybe it's a great drug in that world, but in my world, God, it's just an evil, evil medication. So what do you do? These patients come in on aspirin or Plavix. Do you reverse them is the first question, and that's still fraught with arguments on either side. Neurosurgeons is pretty easy. They just usually want these patients reversed, and I'm kind of in their camp. We've had a bunch of arguments with neurology. They're like, show us the evidence that this actually increases bleeding. And the evidence is scant. We don't know. Intuitively, it seems like it would be a good idea to turn off these guys' antiplatelet activity. But there's not a great amount of data saying that even if you have blood in your head, that the aspirin or the Plavix needs to be reversed. Now, let's say you sit down again with your neurosurgeons and hematologists and you decide you do want to reverse these patients. So then the question becomes, how do you do it? Aspirin probably deserves DDAVP. And dose of that is 0.3 micrograms per kilogram. You generally give it over about 20 minutes. Some of the hematologists would say you should give these guys platelets as well for the aspirin reversal. And we generally do. And that would be just one donor pack of platelets. Now, platelets are evil. And if you guys are subscribers of MRAP, there was an incredible platelet lecture on MRAP. You should listen to that. If you're not, I'll just say it used to be FFP was the great evil. But then they stopped letting women donate FFP, and women were the real problem in terms of the complications of FFP. And now, so once that was changed, platelets are now the great evil medication, probably has the highest complication association for things like trolley, for things like transfusion reactions. And they're dirty. Platelets are dirty. They're not refrigerated, and they're a breeding ground for bacteria. So platelets are kind of gross, but I think in these patients, you wind up giving it. Now, in most hospitals, platelets are not typed. You can give any patient's platelets. And a lot of hematologists are saying that's probably not the best idea, that it probably should be a type-specific product, but the debate is still on. So you give them your DDAVP, you give them one donor pack of platelets, and that should work fairly well on aspirin. Plavix is a bunch tougher to reverse. They definitely need the platelets. Now, if they've taken the Plavix recently, they're just going to chew through the platelets you give them as well. But what are you going to do? You can do what you can. Our hematologist actually recommends DDAVP for these patients as well. And he was mentioning something about the glycoprotein 2B3A receptor. It's beyond me. It's DDAVP is a wholly benign drug. So we give it in addition to the platelets for the Plavix patients. So that's how to reverse Coumadin, it's how to reverse aspirin, how to reverse Plavix. Like I said, we don't know if you should be reversing those latter two drugs. We do. So just as the last part of this, let's talk about disposition. Let's say you get a patient on Coumadin, and their INR is 2.5, therapeutic, and you get the CT scan, and it's negative. And just as a sidebar, you are scanning all these people. I don't care how minor their head trauma is. If they're on aspirin, Plavix, or Coumadin, I get a head CT. In my mind, that's just a no-brainer. No pun intended. So you get the head CT, and it's negative. What do you do with these patients? Do you just discharge them? Do you keep them around for a while? Do you admit them? Do you get a repeat scan? Well, I'll tell you. If your answer is send them right home, you might be getting into some trouble in some of these patients. There's a condition called delayed acute subdural hematoma, or you could just call it delayed acute intracranial bleeding. And it's in these anticoagulator antiplatelet patients, they could have a negative initial CT and then go on to have a bunch of bleeding on repeat. There was an article published in Neurosurgery, which I'll reference in the show notes, saying that maybe these elderly anticoagulated patients should be admitted for 24 hours. Now, another article just published in the Journal of Trauma, kind of scary, they took a whole bunch of patients on aspirin, and some of them were low-dose aspirin patients, and they got all initial CTs, which were negative, and then out of these 100 patients, four of them on repeat CT had intracranial hemorrhage. One of them died from it, and one of them needed a crani. Now, that's a little bit scary. 4% of your patients are going to have bleeding on repeat CT. Do these patients need to be admitted? Do they need repeat CTs? I don't have clear answers for you. I'll tell you this. At the very least, I would keep them in your department for 6 hours or so. That's at the very least. And those are patients with minor head trauma. If they had LOC, they might need admission. A lot of times the neurosurgeons or the trauma guys balk at this. They don't want to admit these patients. They look okay. If you can't get them admitted, then I would say it's not the worst idea in the world to get that 6-hour CT scan in the patients who had more than minor head trauma. So they had loss of consciousness, And no evidence for that. That's just my opinion, reading the literature and seeing a bunch of cases. So do with that what you will. But I think no LOC, so just minor head trauma, CT, 6 hours, observation, you're probably okay. And if you wanted to be really clever, if they come in with mild head trauma on aspirin, Plavix, or Coumadin, and they look fine, you know, there was no loss of consciousness, they just took a minor knock to the head. The really clever way to play these patients, I think, is don't send them for the initial CT at arrival if they're in perfect neuro exam, everything. Keep them around for the 6 hours and then send them for the CT and then send them home. Because what happens is they get delayed bleeding that's missed on these CTs that are done right away. If you can show me a 6 hour CT, even if it is the initial CT, that's probably a patient who's pretty safe with mild head trauma, normal neuro exam. Now, if they had a little bit more serious head trauma, they had LOC, yeah, I'd probably get the initial CT because these are the patients at a higher risk of having that bleed on the initial CT. And I'd probably say if you can't admit them, to get that 6 hour CT as well. So yes, now we're talking two CT scans, and you guys are all going to get really angry at me if you're a hospital or ED administrator, and that's fine. But I think that's probably the safer way to go. No evidence for this. This is opinion-based. I really wish the neurosurgeons would come out with some evidence-based guidelines for this because it's really tough to know what to do. But I think that might be the way to play these guys. And now you show me that 80-year-old that fell down the stairs. That's a patient that needs to be admitted. And this is a big argument we have with our trauma service. But if you're elderly and you took a fall, you probably shouldn't be going home to your apartment alone, regardless whether you're on these medications or not. And oftentimes we'll admit those patients as a syncope admission, even though it's questionable whether they really had syncope or they just tripped, because we don't want to be sending these patients home. You show me that 85-year-old on aspirin, Plavix, or Coumadin, and wow, that's just not a discharge in my mind. So do with that all what you will. Send me any questions. I'm going to put a whole bunch of references and links in the show notes on this topic because it's a really broad and complicated issue. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. I'd love to know what you're doing at your hospitals. And for my international listeners, if you're using the four-factor PCCs and you've had good or bad experiences, let me know. I'd love to hear about that. All right, that's all for this week. It's going to be a short one because tomorrow is our annual ED Critical Care Conference, and I'm going to be posting those lectures, so you'll hear a lot more. And I'll talk to you soon.